G'day mate, how you going? This is the Legal Mullet. Welcome to the show, and tonight we're going to be looking at Battle Beyond the Stars, a film which, in its own, is a lower budget science fiction movie that was made in the wake of Star Wars and was definitely aimed at that market. Made by, of course, Roger Corman's company, this film is The Magnificent Seven in Space. A lot of us grew up with this movie on VHS and, of course, on reruns late at night in the 1980s on TV and in, of course, cable TV. But now we will revisit this film and what made it special. And, of course, it gave a chance to some very talented filmmakers which have gone on to very successful careers. All that and more tonight on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Incoming transmission from What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast.
Battle Beyond the Stars. You know, everybody likes to talk about how Roger Corman isn't able to make anything other than B movies. But this thing is an adventure. I know it's mostly seven samurai in space, but also it's seven samurai in space. Plus, you get the great Sybil Danning. How can you go wrong?
All right, lights, camera. Action. Now, where's the mullet? Where is he? Is he coming in by chopper again?
And now, live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia, it's time again for your dose of action cinema history from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. With the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Oh, g'day, mate. How you going?
G'day, folks. Welcome to the show. This is, of course, the Lethal Mullet, episode number 199. And, of course, Battle Beyond the Stars. A movie, to be honest with you, I had not seen in a long time. Up until about probably 2016, it was, that I revisited this movie. This is a movie on VHS, was a massive hit out here in Australia. And it was obviously a low-budget clone of Star Wars. There's no getting around it. Roger Corman even, you know, wanted to make a movie that was in that vein of space opera, you know, and they even did just like George did, took a story that was pretty much an Akira Kurosawa story, you know, in this case, the Seven Samurai, not the Hidden Fortress like George did. And this film is quite enjoyable. It's one that has a great cast. It's actually, the cast is fantastic in this one, and this latest edition of it, which is from the Roger Corman Cult Classics 30th anniversary edition of Battle Beyond the Stars, which I've got from the United States. You cannot get it here in Australia. You need to jump onto Amazon and order it and wait for it to come over, but it is fantastic and well worth getting, even just for the commentary alone. There's two commentaries on this, which we'll talk about very soon. And we'll talk about why this movie is, you know, fondly thought of, you know, particularly in the wake of Star Wars. We didn't really have sequels and stuff like that to movies back then. Obviously, we had Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi come hot on the heels of the success of 1977's Star Wars. But this kind of filled the void back in 1980, and it's definitely one which boasts an amazing array of talented people behind the scenes, one of them being James Cameron himself. So, and of course, James Horner, and of course, Galen Hurd. And believe it or not, a carpenter on the set was by the name of Bill Paxton. See, all the seeds for greatness were starting here, folks. All that and more tonight on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
G'day, mate. How you going? Welcome to the Lethal Mullet Network, where you'll find all these amazing shows and more. Where you'll find the Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema from the 80s, 90s, and beyond. You'll also find Making Treks, a Star Trek fan podcast, where I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Mark Newbold, into a deep dive of Star Trek. You'll also find Mullet and Kilt, a look at music, where I'm joined by my dear pal, Darth Elvis. and where you can also find The Mullet Guild, a look at the Dune universe. All here on, of course, lethalmulletnetwork.podbean.com or on your favorite podcatcher. You can find us there. You can also find all these shows a week later on, of course, the one, the only Fandom Podcast Network, FPN, on fpnet.podbean.com. Don't forget to also follow us on socials. There's, of course, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at the handle at the Lethal Mullet. We'll catch you out there and enjoy your action cinema.
Alrighty, mate. Time to go down to the pub for a pint, a chat, action movies, and more. Here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast.
Battle Beyond the Stars is a 1980 space opera. Produced by Roger Corman and was directed by Jimmy T. Murakami. This is a film which was a real cult classic back in the day and still is today on cable TV, on late nights, even on straight to air channels. And of course, it's already on as well. A lot of VHS stores using it as pretty much a big release in 1980, in the wake, of course, of Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back as well. And a lot of the films which are coming out at the time, even, of course, Star Trek was, having its resurgence with Star Trek The Motion Picture in 79, just before it as well. So this is an interesting movie which stars Richard Thomas, Robert Vaughn, George Peppard, John Saxon, Sybil Danning, and Darlene Flugel, as well as, boasting, of course, the effects work of James Cameron, a score by James Horner, a story written by John Sayles, and also Galen Hurd worked on this one too. And as I mentioned earlier, Bill Paxton was on this film also working as a carpenter, which is something you find out in the commentaries on this one too. Now, this is Seven Samurai, or The Magnificent Seven, in space. That's literally what it is. And it's an interesting take on it as well. Now, of course, this is something that's heavily influenced by that used, Star Wars universe. And Roger Corman, no doubt, saw what George Lucas had done and how pretty much revolutionized, theatrical outings when it came to science fiction in what was a very accessible style of science fiction and didn't have all the bells and whistles that, say, Star Trek has, which wasn't quite as, accessible to people that weren't into science fiction. And that's what makes the Star Wars movies in particular a different style than the other science fiction. It's more a space fantasy style because there's trappings of, high fantasy in space, basically. It's very Lord of the Rings when you think about how those ones are brought out. But this film is more like a Western. It definitely has that more gunslinger vibe about particularly the characters that we get in this, and particularly because that's the nature of the story itself too. So here is the plot. So there's a place called Akira, which obviously is a reference to the creator of the Seven Samurai, Akira Kurosawa, the great Japanese filmmaker. The world is threatened by a very evil warlord, by the name of Sador, played by John Saxon. And it's classic John Saxon, folks. It's a very straight down by the numbers sort of style of acting, which he, was famous for. And of course, he was great because he's the guy that beat up Bolo Jung in Enter the Dragon. Obviously, he's in a lot of other stuff as well, but that's what we mainly know him from. So we have him working for, of course, the Malmori Empire, this organization which obviously is trying to rule in a very sinister style over planets like Akira and strip it of its natural resources. So John Saxon's character, Sador, is also one that's basically dying off. Parts of his body are basically deteriorating, and basically from here what he wants to do is take them from others and use an operation to put it back together, basically, which is what his whole basically premise is, which is quite weird, but it's different. He's got a massive dreadnought ship that looks like a hammerhead and it's a hammerhead. And it's got a weapon in there called the Stellar Converter. And it's a weapon that turns planets into small stars, sounding a little bit like a Death Star, isn't it, folks, eh? So he says to Akia, they need to submit to him. And he then uses the time that he's going to do this in by calling it Seven Risings of Your Red Giant, or their star, which is interesting. So what's great about this part is you start to see how that ropes into, obviously, the story of the Seven Samurai, where we have, and even the Magnificent Seven, where we have a bandit come in and basically say, look, we're going to give you so much time to come and basically get your materials, etc. So same idea, same principle. But, of course, people of Akia want to stand up to that. So from here, he says he will use his Stellar Converter on the people. And of course, from here too, he then makes a bit of a statement where he says, snipers forward. I always thought it was interesting. The way he says it. Who says that on a starship? Snipers forward. But of course, he then goes and gets his men on the crew on the hammerhead to shoot down some of the people on Akia and to make a bit of a statement. Now, Zed, who is an old hero and elder in here, played by Jeff Corey, he's the famous last one of the Corsairs, which is a hero, warrior sort of character. But he's now old and he's blind as well, so he can't really do what he needs to do to help. So he says, basically, what you should do is get some mercenaries to look after the planet of Akia. But they have no resources, and they can't really offer anything in place of what a mercenary would usually go through. But they can offer food, and they can offer shelter in exchange for payment there. So Zed can't go after this people, of course. So instead, he offers his only possession that could do any justice to this, which is, of course, his ship. And, of course, the ship is fast, it's heavily armed, and has its own AI as well, called Nell, which is great in this too. But it's not strong enough to take on Sador, of course, and the Malmori Empire alone. Along enters, of course, Richard Thomas, who plays Shad, who's a young member of the planet Akia, who then pilots the ship and knows Nell quite well. So he decides to help out and volunteers to do the rescue mission and finds the people. From here, he goes in search of course, people and weapons. He goes to the space station of Dr. Hephaestus, played by Sam Jaffe. This character's one of the other ones that's an old friend of Zed and old friend of the Corsairs. Because he's, you know, up and coming, he still needs to learn from some of these older warriors. This is where we have Shad trying to find somebody that's a mentor for his future. But as he goes to this station, he finds it's filled with androids and there's literally only two people on the place itself. Hephaestus himself, who's now on his last, stretch of life with basically being supported by a life support system. He's basically a cyborg. And, of course, Nanella, which is his daughter, played by, of course, Darlan Flugel. And she takes care of him and the androids on the station. But, of course, the whole thing of him getting trapped there in this part two is that Dr. Hephaestus wants him to mate with, of course, his daughter so that they can, of course, keep the humanity alive here. But after this, he finds a way out and, of course, splits up to look for more people. Then he runs into George Peppard's character called Cowboy, who is a freighter pilot, and he comes from the planet Earth. And he's got some space jackers that are after him in this sequence. And, of course, he's trying to deliver a lot of laser handguns to a planet, Umatil. from here, Shad helps him out to get rid of the Jackers. And, of course, Cowboy basically gets his life saved more than once here. This is about twice. They arrive on the planet just in time before Sadul comes down, and he then tries to destroy the planet with, of course, that huge stellar converter. But, of course, they can't get their transport back because they've run out of power to do it. So from here, Cowboy, of course, takes the offer to take all of those to, of course, Akir instead and give the weapons to the people of Akir. From here, too, he then says Cowboy will check and give him the experience of being a gunslinger. He starts to learn those skills. From here, Shad then meets what will be, of course, another character from, or another actor, I should say, from the Terminator franchise in here too, which we'll talk about very, very soon. And once you know who it is, it's quite interesting. Of course, this is Nestor, which is a group of aliens, five aliens, clones that work together as a hive mind, kind of like, I guess, Star Trek's Borg, if you like. They say, "We are Nestor." And of course, they're bored. Everything's perfect, and they want to get a bit of entertainment and into their lives. And of course, that's the reason that they want to join Shad and are happy not to be paid, basically. And they do not require anything because they're completely self-sufficient. He then meets Gelt, played by Robert Vaughn, who is a well-to-do assassin who cannot show his self into any place because, of course, he's wanted everywhere for his skills and obviously for his being famous as an assassin. And Robert Vaughn's basically playing the same character he did in the actual Magnificent Seven some 20 years earlier. Again, fantastic actor who would also turn up in the Michael Biehn Magnificent Seven TV show, which is something we've covered here before, folks. We've actually covered that here on the show quite a while ago. And it was a really good one to go over because I enjoy that one too. Of course, Gelt is a really well-to-do gunslinger himself. Cool and everything. And without a doubt wants to do what needs to be done to help out. Then, of course, we meet Sybil Danning's character afterwards too, who comes in as a powerful warrior herself too. And she's basically one of the Valkyrie warriors. And she's got a much smaller ship, but she's just as powerful as any of the others as well. From here, Nellia is then also captured by a reptilian character by the name of Kamen of the Lazuli, played by Morgan Woodward. And the makeups on these are quite fantastic. It's very much high-end Star Trek style work on this too. Looks fantastic. And again, this brings up the sci-fi vibe even better. From here, they are also recruited into the team after they let go of Nanelia. And basically what happens there is that they're after the same cause, which is to kill Sador. And of course, they all get together. So from here, we have basically a massive showdown for against the Melmori, with everyone joining together, just like in the Magnificent Seven, to take on Sador. And it's all in space. And of course, there's a very satisfying part where, of course, the stellar converter backfires and destroys the hammerhead itself. Everyone goes back to Akia. And of course, there's quite a few deaths, which I won't spoil. But of course, there from here, Shad then shares with Akia's Varda that nobody's truly dead when they're loved and celebrated, which I think is a fantastic and beautiful ending too. You know, the Varda is kind of like the Force in some ways, but it's a life force, something in their belief system, which is even too. And all those heroes will be forever honored in the halls of Akia. So it's a very heroic story, very powerful story, and it's one that, without a doubt, is one of my favourites too. All right, let's have a look at a bit of the cast now, folks, too. So Richard Thomas as Shad. a young Akira farmer. He's basically who looks after the mercenaries in the film, and he's out to save his people. Now, as the story goes on, we get to see him be from basically a bookish nerd-like character into basically one that is the next Akira Corsair, or basically the brother of the ill-fated Maul. And what's great about this is that he's very much like Luke Skywalker, pretty much without the Force, but he is one that's you know, learning about being not just an adult, but also being you know, a hero, what it takes to really save people. And really, really interesting. Robert Vaughn is Gelt, notorious gunman and gunslinger, and he's got an intergalactic bounty on his head. And of course, you know, he's somebody who's got massive riches, but now all he wants is a meal and a place to hide to get away from everything. And as we said, it's pretty much the same character as Gelt in the original version, the Magnificent Seven. So Sador, played by John Saxon, leader of the evil Malmori Raiders, or the Empire, and is extremely old, keeps himself alive using basically new body parts through transplants and stuff like that too. And this is pretty much the Calvera character from The Magnificent Seven as well. George Pappard is Space Cowboy, the only character from our planet, Earth. And he is basically Shad's best friend in this too. And he's using constant gags and one-liners in this too. Pappard obviously is very famous for us that grew up in the 80s as, you know, obviously the member of the A-Team as Hannibal. And obviously too, he's done a lot of famous Westerns as well. So it's great to have somebody that was definitely part of that as much as Robert Vaughn was. Darlan Flugel plays Nanelia, the beautiful daughter, of course, of Dr. Hephaestus. And she and Shad obviously fall in love. She's put really good in this one too. I think she did really well. Sybil Danning as well as Saint X-Men, the Valkyrie warrior. And basically, she's just trying to prove herself in battle. She's willing to die in battle, put herself first, and quite interesting too. Sam Jeff as Dr. Hephaestus, the old man on life support. And basically, all he wants to do is have grandchildren running around in his space station. You know, he wants to get the ground running for a family there too. Jeff Corey as Zed the Corsair. Basically, he was a Kira warrior originally, and now he's almost basically blind. And of course, he was the former pilot of Nell, Shed's starship now, and he used to call assistant computer old girl, of course. That's Nell. Morgan Woodward as Kamen, the Lambda Zone, basically the Lazuli, Zyma alien and slaver, basically who wants to take out Sadol for killing the rest of his species. We've also got Marta Kristen as Lux, a Kira warrior who works the early warning systems and starts a relationship as well with Space Cowboy in the movie too. Now, Nestor, or the first Nestor One, is played by Earl Bowen. That's, of course, the doctor, or in this case, the one that's always looking after Sarah Connor in the Terminator series. Yeah, so, and he's always copping it from the Terminators too. John Goins plays Nestor number two. Lynn Carlin is Nell's voice, the computer, which or AI, which is controlling Shad's ship. She's very protective of Shad. And basically sees how, you know, inexperienced Shad is. And she doesn't like it when she's called Old Girl by Zed as well. Larry Myers plays Kelvin 1, one of the Kamen crew. Lara Cody plays Kelvin 2. Steve Davis is Q-Peg, which is another member of the Kamen crew. And, of course, Julia Duffy plays Mole, Shad's sister in this too. Yeah, it's a pretty big cast and a great cast. Obviously, a lot of the money went to getting Pappard and Robert Vaughn. I mean, to get those two on board must have cost a fortune. Okay, let's talk about the production. Now, it's estimated that the budget of the movie was $2 million. Now, this is one of the most expensive movies, and it's rumored to be the most expensive film that was produced by Roger Corman. You know, obviously he's known for squeezing as much budget as he possibly can. And when it came to looking at, you know, what he was up against, which is, of course, trying to clone and trying to get the feel and flavor of something like Star Wars on a very, very small budget. Now, of course, that had a huge success. And even Star Wars itself wasn't a massive budget. You know, that was a considerably low budget for the kind of film that it was going to be. Now, a lot of the budget was allegedly going towards, of course, getting both Robert Vaughn and, of course, George Peppard to be part of this. And, of course, the other things too, that the screenwriter, John Sells, had worked on low-budget productions before this as well. So they basically had the right people to keep the costs down and to keep it effective and, most thing, make it to the point where this is not going to cost them too much money so that they can make as much as they can at the box office. So it was also produced in Roger Corman's own studio. And basically, this is a place in Venice, California, that his lovingly said they call it the renowned Lumberyard facility. And, of course, this is where a lot of his stuff was made at the time as well. And, of course, it was his desire to make a space opera-style film in the, after the wake of Star Wars has kicked in. And, of course, John Sells had also done The Lady in Red and Piranha. So he knew that he was onto the right way of getting something in there. Australian director Richard Franklin, who did Patrick and Psycho 2, was originally going to be the director on this film, but he was then taken over by Jimmy T. Murakami, who's an animator and a veteran in that field, and basically done some uncredited work as a co-director on Roger Corman's Humanoids from the Deep as well. So there's a lot going in this, obviously, is referential towards Akira Kurosawa, who, of course, did the original film, Seven Samurai, which was then also given a little bit of obviously, resurgence in The Magnificent Seven as well a few years later. So the planet Akia and its inhabitants itself, this alien race, were all named, obviously, in honor of Akira Kurosawa. Yeah, here's what's interesting too. Now, this film really is one that got people started in careers. And for me, Roger Corman brought on James Cameron because he had great model-making skills and worked for the studio after he'd seen his short film, Exogenesis. And, of course, with this, they'd also had an issue with an art director originally, and they were fired. And then Cameron became completely responsible for all of the special effects and production design and art direction, as Cameron would put it through. Of course, this is the big break. This is where he got his, you know, chance to really work at, you know, getting his skills up to where it was. But also, too, this is where he met, of course, his future wife, Gail Ann Hurd, who had already been working for Roger Corman for a while there, too. And obviously, she's pretty big in on her own in field as well, because she's got such a long history now as a producer. You know, and a lot of the films she had worked with of course, James Cameron too. Now, of course, Cameron had done some of the camera rigging. He'd also worked on special effects and production design through the sets as well. And, of course, with this, because it's a low budget, Cameron designed the corridors of ships and stuff like that using things as simple as McDonald's containers. Also worked on using milk crates and stuff like that, as they said in the commentaries. Milk crates were used on the floors and ceilings so they could put light blow through them and give that sort of grated look that has that real futuristic ship pattern look, if you like. There was attention to detail and everything. And, of course, part of this was giving him the great chance to actually get out there and put some of this stuff to work later on movies like Aliens. Gail Ann Hurd also had somebody else that was very, very much working with Cameron later in the field. It was, of course, Bill Paxton, who worked as a carpenter on the set. This is where they both would work together and learn. And, of course,
They'd worked later on Terminator and other films, and Bill's obviously followed those two around. What she said of working with him and obviously Cameron on Aliens. So my first memory of Bill was him pounding nails and cracking everybody up with jokes. I mean, we'd been working at 3 or 4 in the morning, and we'd be the one, he'd keep all our spirits up. He was that person on and off the set. Now, anyone that's seen Ghost from the Abyss will know that, of course, he seemed the real life of the party sort of person, so it sounded amazing. Now, the film score was done by, of course, James Horner. And James Horner basically done a few film scores. This was his third film score. He'd worked on Roger Corman's Humans from the Deep and also The Lady in Red. And he'd been brought back by the same producers to work on, of course, Battle Beyond the Stars. There's many staples of his style of adventure and science fiction to be found in the sound mix of this as well. Some of those sounds would be recycled in things like, of course, Krull and, of course, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. And, of course, he was a frequent collaborator with Cameron and also won, of course, the Academy Award for Best Original Score for Titanic. There's also a lot of the sounds that you're going to find, you know, he had that sort of style that I think even a lot of others tried to bring to the fore as well. Now, what's interesting in this is, too, that back when the film was being cast, the Hollywood trades were saying that John Wayne would star in the movie under the direction of Ingmar Bergman, which is interesting. Would that have ever happened? In a Roger Corman production, who knows? Now, there's a lot of reused material. This film had been done and used many times on many of the other Roger Corman productions and stuff like that too. Starship footage can be found in Space Raiders, which is another one that was not did well with critics. Other ones, Star Quest II, Vampirella, Fantastic Four, Dead Space and Forbidden World all had used some of that. It was later used in later films and video games and even turned to 3D in some parts. And it was also shown in Bachelor Party in the 3D section there too. And the soundtrack had been recycled again by Corman for Raptor and some other films as well. Never to leave something to lay on the side for too long. You obviously like to use a lot of this too. It was released on July 25, 1980, grossing not quite as much as they expected. And, of course, it only grossed $1.732 million in its first 3 days. The film later, of course, was coming out in DVD in 2001. By New Concord, and of course Corman recouped his costs upon selling the foreign rights to Orion Productions and Warner Brothers for $2.5 million. He also sold cable rights to HBO for $750,000. And it's interesting because it has been available now on this new 30th edition, which we'll talk about in a sec, for a little while. But out here in Australia, you've got Buckley's chance of getting it out on anything within Australia itself other than VHS. It's just not available. If you're going to get this one, you need to get it from another source, most likely Amazon, or you can try, of course, eBay. So the reception. Battle Beyond the Stars received basically mixed reviews during its because, again, it's similar space opera setting and stuff to Star Wars. And, of course, it's pretty obvious they were trying to capitalize on the success of that film. And, of course, Cameron's special effects were the big things that were being praised. Because, you know, on a small budget, he definitely achieved what he set out to do as well. And, of course, the big thing is, you know, it's the technologies and everything bring it through too. And it basically gets around about a 50% mark. So it's, you either love it or you hate it. There's no real getting around it. So awards, outstanding achievement for the Saturn Awards was Sybil Danning in 1981. She got that. Saturn Awards also Best Science Fiction Film for 1981. Best Special Effects, Chuck Comiskey for 1981. Best Costumes, Jurinder Wood, 1981. And, of course, Best Makeup by Sue Dole, Steve Neill, Nick Stratton, 1981. Now, there's never been a sequel to this, but there has been a prequel of sorts, which came out in 2010, set 30 years before the film, and it was launched by Blue Water Productions in March 2010. It's a four-part mini-series telling the story of how Zed, the old man played by Jeff Corey, began his adventures from the planet Akia with Nell. It also has the characters of Dr. Hephaestus and Sador of the Malmori, which is interesting because the rest of the characters would be just too young, I think, too. I mean, it's just not enough out there to get it, too. All right, so obviously you get a feel of it that way, folks, of what this movie's like and how it feels. But let's talk about the edition that we've been talking about, of course. Okay, so Battle Beyond the Stars is the Roger Corman Cult Classics you can get, 30th Anniversary Edition. Now, as we're looking at it now, it just shows you get a blurb at the top. This was the most expensive production I had financed. Always liked science fiction, and my idea was to do something of the feeling of Star Wars. What I came up with was Seven Samurai in Outer Space. And obviously this is out by Shout Factory that are doing these ones too. So again, to get these, most likely you're going to have to try it from an American source or by the UK. Special features, it's got a new widescreen transfer from the original negative, I guess. New 5.1 Dolby sound. Commentary by writer John Sowles and Roger Corman. And that commentary is gold, folks. I've got to say, it's great. There's also a commentary by Gail Ann Hurd. And I've listened to about probably three quarters of that, and it's really good. A lot of stuff about James Cameron on that one too. There's a new interview with actor Richard Thomas, who played Shad, and it's called The Man Who Would Be Shad. Space Opera on a Shoestring, which is basically a look behind the film, comprehensive look at the technical challenges, and, of course, post-production of the film. It's with Aaron Lipstadt, Alec Gillis, Alex Hadju, Alan Holzman, RJ Kaiser, Robert and Denise Strotak, and Tom Schaus and Tony Randall. Trailer, TV, and radio spots. Pretty cool, folks. I mean, it is a fun movie that I was surprised just how fun it is to revisit. I mean, it's been many years since I had even seen it. But to get this edition and just what you get for it is actually well worth your time. This is a 5 out of 5 on the Hallenbach Scale.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. Here are the other great shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. Culture Clash, where we discuss the latest in entertainment and pop culture. Blood of Kings, our show covering the entire Highlander universe. Couch Potato Theater, we celebrate our favorite movies. And Time Warp, our fandom flashback show discussing a year in movies and our favorite retro movie, TV, and pop culture topics. Good Evening, discussing all things Alfred Hitchcock. Hair Metal Podcast, we cover the rock metal music of the 80s and early 90s. Type 40, a Doctor Who podcast, discussing the time-traveling Doctor Who universe. Lethal Mullet, an action film podcast, covering the 80s, 90s, and beyond. Also, check out the Lethal Mullet Network for more great podcasts. What a Piece of Junk, our Star Wars podcast. Making Treks, a Star Trek podcast, with a deep dive into the final frontier. The Fandom Show, our Fandom Podcast Network live YouTube show discussing the hottest topics in fandom. The True Believers MCU Podcast, discussing the Marvel Cinematic and Television Universe. Union Federation, our Star Trek and the Orville show. And we're proud to welcome the BQN Network to the Fandom Podcast Network. Please visit our friends on the BQN Network, a Star Trek Universe podcast that also includes your favorite topics, movies, history, superheroes, and more. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on YouTube. The Fandom Podcast Network is also on all major podcast platforms. The Fandom Podcast Network audio master feed is on Podbean at fpnet.podbean.com. You can find the Fandom Podcast Network on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.